I'm VOA's Alexis Strope with your worldwide news update. The Palestinian militant group Hamas and Israel traded blame on Wednesday over their failure to conclude a ceasefire agreement, despite both sides having reported progress in recent days. Reuters' Olivia Zelino reports.
Hamas said that Israel had laid down further conditions. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accused the Palestinian militant group of going back on understandings already reached. Israeli negotiators returned to Israel from Qatar on Tuesday evening for consultations about a hostage deal after a significant week of talks. Netanyahu's office said on Tuesday, the U.S., Qatar, and Egypt have stepped up efforts to conclude a phase deal in the past 2 weeks. One of the challenges has been agreements on Israeli troop deployments. In a video released on Wednesday, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said Israel would retain security control of the enclave, including with buffer zones and controlling posts. Hamas is demanding an end to the war, while Israel says it wants to end Hamas's rule of the enclave first, to ensure it will no longer pose a threat to Israelis.
That was Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino. An Azerbaijani airliner with 67 people on board has crashed near the Kazakhstani city of Aktau. A Kazakh official said 38 people were killed and 29 survived. The Embraer 190 had been en route from the Azerbaijani capital of Baku to the Russian city of Grozny in the North Caucasus when it was diverted and attempted an emergency landing near Aktau. Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev said that while it was too soon to speculate on the reasons behind the crash, the weather had forced the plane to change from its planned course. Russia's Civil Aviation Authority, Rosaviatsiya, said the preliminary information showed that the pilots diverted to Aktau before a bird strike led to an emergency on board. This is VOA News. China and Japan agreed to talks on security issues as they seek to mend ties. VOA's Christina Menenti has more.
China and Japan have agreed to set up talks on often contentious security issues. The two countries are seeking to improve a relationship struggling in recent years on a range of issues, from territorial disputes to the discharge of water from Japan's tsunami-wrecked nuclear power plant. Japanese Foreign Minister Takeshi Iwaya sounded positive Wednesday after meetings in Beijing with Chinese Premier Li Qiang and Foreign Minister Wang Yi. He calls the talks, quote, very candid and wide-ranging. I'm Christina Menenti, VOA News.
People have started gathering in prayer and are visiting mass graves in Indonesia's Aceh province to mark 20 years since the massive Indian Ocean tsunami, one of modern history's worst natural disasters. A powerful 9.1 magnitude earthquake off the coast of the Indonesian island of Sumatra on December 26, 2004, triggered a tsunami that killed around 230,000 people across a dozen countries, reaching as far as East Africa. Some 1.7 million people were displaced, mostly in the four worst affected countries, Indonesia, Sri Lanka, India, and Thailand. More than 170,000 people died in Indonesia alone. There is an undersea power cable outage in Europe. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
A power cable linking Finland and Estonia under the Baltic Sea suffered an outage. It prompted an investigation. That's according to a social media announcement from Finnish Prime Minister Petteri Orpo. He said the interruption would not affect electricity supplies in Finland. Estonian network operator Elering said there was enough spare capacity to meet power needs on the Estonian side. Authorities have been on edge about undersea infrastructure in the Baltic. Two data cables, one running between Finland and Germany, the other between Lithuania and Sweden, were severed in November. I'm Haya Panjwani.
A prison riot in Mozambique's capital, Maputo, left 33 people dead and 15 injured, the country's police general commander, Bernardino Rafael, said on Wednesday, as civil unrest linked to October's disputed election continues. A decision on Monday by Mozambique's top court confirming long-ruling party Frelimo's victory in the election sparked fresh nationwide protests by opposition groups and their supporters, who said the vote was rigged. While Rafael blamed protests outside the prison for encouraging the riot, Justice Minister Helena Kita told local private broadcaster Miramar TV that the unrest started inside the prison and had nothing to do with protests outside. About 1,534 people had escaped from the prison in the incident, and 150 were recaptured, Rafael said, adding that there were prison break attempts at two other prisons. That wraps up this update, but the world in news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
passenger plane crashed in Kazakhstan.
The plane had flown hundreds of miles off its scheduled route to crash on the opposite shore of the Caspian Sea.
A look at press freedom in Zambia.
We have seen political party figures still storming radio stations to disturb programming and threaten journalists there. We have seen a journalist being detained by the police.
And President-elect Trump says he wants the Panama Canal back. And that's not all he wants.
As he named his ambassador to Denmark on Sunday, Trump wrote that, quote, "For purposes of national security and freedom throughout the world, the United States of America feels the ownership and control of Greenland is an absolute necessity."
Today is Thursday, December 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Steve Karish in Washington. There's been a plane crash in Kazakhstan. An Azerbaijan Airlines jet crashed after veering hundreds of kilometers off course with no explanation. 38 were killed and rescue work continues. Reuters' Lucy Fielder gets us started today.
An eyewitness video shows the moment a passenger plane crashes in Kazakhstan on Wednesday, with many feared dead. Kazakh authorities said 62 passengers and 5 crew were on board the plane, which was operated by Azerbaijan Airlines. At least 32 people were rescued, they said, and survivors, including 2 children, were being treated at a nearby hospital. The plane had flown hundreds of miles off its scheduled route to crash on the opposite shore of the Caspian Sea, close to the city of Aktau, Kazakhstan. Russia's aviation watchdog said a bird strike may have forced the pilot to land. Officials did not immediately explain why it had crossed the sea, but the crash came shortly after drone strikes hit southern Russia. Drone activity has shut airports in the area in the past, and at least one airport there was closed on Wednesday morning. Azerbaijan Airlines said the Embraer 190 jet was flying from Baku to Grozny, the capital of the Chechnya region in southern Russia. Ramzan Kadyrov, the Kremlin-backed leader of Chechnya, said in a statement some of those being treated in hospital were in a serious condition. Authorities in Kazakhstan said a government commission had been set up to investigate the cause of the crash.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters reporting. Meanwhile, in Ukraine, Kyiv residents took shelter at metro stations on Christmas morning after the Ukrainian military sounded a countrywide air alert in response to Russian cruise missile launches. Families with children and pets sat or slept on mats inside train stations in the early hours of the holiday. Natalia, who's sheltering away from home, says she is scared because she has a child. And of course she wants to be at home celebrating, but they had to shelter because it's too scary at home. They want peace, she said. Russia also attacked Ukraine's energy system and cities in its eastern region with cruise and ballistic missiles. Russia has intensified its attacks on the Ukrainian energy sector since spring of 2024, damaging almost half of its generating capacity and causing hours-long blackouts throughout the country. On Wednesday, President Joe Biden released a statement condemning Moscow's bombing of civilian infrastructure, saying the Ukrainian people deserve to live in peace and safety, and the United States and the international community must continue to stand with Ukraine until it triumphs over Russia's aggression. Biden's statement also said the U.S. is continuing to supply Kyiv with air defense missiles. Now to Africa, where a new report says that media freedoms in Zambia are under attack. The report says more than 60% of the people surveyed think members of the media cannot operate freely because they face frequent instances of harassment and intimidation. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
The Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA, launched its report on December 17th in Zambia's capital, Lusaka. MISA chairperson Lorraine Mwanza said that journalists in Zambia still face censorship and violence in the course of their duties. Both she and the report cited the case of Thomas Ziziambo, an investigative journalist who has been arrested 3 times in the last 13 months for writing stories that Zambian authorities deemed overly critical. Ziziambo faces up to 7 years in prison if convicted of charges that include libel and sedition. Ziziambo told VOA that he will not stop writing and reporting.
All the 3 cases, basically, It's a journalist trying to find answers on behalf of the public. But I'm now in court because instead of the government answering, I've decided to use the police to criminalize journalism and take me to court. So I'm in court with three criminal charges before three different major shoots.
Zambo's legal trouble started in November 2023 when he was arrested in connection with an article in which he alleged the government institution was renting a property from President Hakainde Hichilema. In August of this year, he was arrested for a 2022 story about an allegedly illegal government purchase of fertilizer. And in October, he was arrested for an article he wrote about food imports. The most recent arrest came hours after President Hichilema promised to uphold press freedom in a speech read on his behalf by chief government spokesperson Cornelius Mwetwa. Joan Chirwa is the founder of a Zambian media advocacy group, the Free Press Initiative. Chirwa told VOA she agrees with the findings of the MISA report.
We have seen political party figures still storming radio stations to disturb programming and threaten journalists there. We have seen journalists being detained by the police. We have also seen journalists being lumped with criminal charges just because of what they have written. And our biggest worry right now is what may likely happen as we get closer to the 2026 election.
Chirwa criticized colonial era laws being used by authorities against journalists in Zambia. These include criminal defamation, sedition, and state security laws, which Chirwa says are a hindrance to journalists playing their role as a watchdog on the government. However, at the launch of the MISA report, an official at the Information Ministry, Mumanga Moden Mayembe, argued that the government has not interfered with media freedoms at all. Mayembe said the government has opened up the media space as evidenced by its licensing of more than 200 radio stations, 50 TV stations, and many online platforms.
When platforms are few, then there will be few people expressing themselves on those platforms. When we just had one TV station, for you to appear on TV, you needed to be a president, you needed to be a vice president, a minister, or at least somebody with a name in society.
However, Mutoki Mumo, the African program coordinator with the Committee to Protect Journalists, said in a recent statement that the continued harassment of Zambo paints a stark picture of the emptiness behind the government's pledges to protect journalists. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
More troubling news about journalists today. A group of reporters gathered for a press conference in Haiti were targeted by gunmen. At least three people were killed. Reuters' Gabe Singer has that story.
Armed men killed at least three people on Tuesday after they opened fire on a group of journalists covering the reopening of Haiti's largest public hospital. A journalist at the scene said two reporters and a police officer were killed. Here, people are assisting a man injured in the shooting. Journalists were invited to arrive at the hospital in the downtown area of the capital, Port-au-Prince, at 8 a.m. for a government press conference with Haiti's new health minister. 3 hours later, they were still awaiting the minister when shooting began. Eyewitness video showed journalists huddled on the floor, with some appearing to have been shot, while others fled the hospital over this wall. This woman lost her husband. She is asking why God would allow such a thing to happen to her on Christmas. Leslie Voltaire is the president of the Presidential Transition Council of Haiti. Speaking after the incident, he said it would not go unpunished.
We express our sympathy to all the victims' families, in particular to the Haiti National Police and all the journalists' associations. We guarantee them that this act will not remain without consequences.
The State University of Haiti Hospital has been closed since a surge of gang attacks in March that saw the country's former prime minister ousted from power. Armed gangs now have near total control over Port-au-Prince and a wide reach over the rest of the country. They have targeted hospitals and forced most of them to shut down in a display of strength over the government.
Gabe Singer of Reuters with that report for us today. And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. Taliban officials in Afghanistan reported on Wednesday that at least 46 people in an eastern border region were killed in an overnight aerial bombing allegedly conducted by Pakistan. While Pakistan has not commented on the allegation, Pakistani security officials told reporters on the condition of anonymity that the military targeted multiple locations in Afghanistan associated with the outlawed Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan militant group. Israel and Hamas accused each other of complicating ceasefire efforts on Wednesday as they inched closer to a deal that could end the 14-month war in Gaza. The two sides appear closer than they've been in months to reaching an agreement. However, on Wednesday, Hamas accused Israel of introducing new conditions that it said were delaying the deal. Israel's government, in turn, accused Hamas of reneging on understandings that had already been reached. Still, both sides say discussions were ongoing. At least two people were killed and over 4,000 made homeless Tuesday by the sudden outbreak of a massive fire in the Rohingya refugee camp in Kuta Palong, Bangladesh. More than a million Rohingya refugees are living in bamboo and tarpaulin shacks across southeastern Bangladesh, with several thousand others pouring in over the last few months, fleeing clashes in their native Myanmar between the government and the rebel Akan army. VOA's International Edition continues. Steve Karish in Washington. Turning to American politics and the presidential transfer of power, as he prepares to take office in less than a month, President-elect Donald Trump has raised eyebrows this week when he threatened to reassert U.S. control over the Panama Canal, and he renewed calls to buy Greenland from Denmark. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has that story.
Greenland, the ice-covered semi-autonomous Danish territory, is again in President-elect Donald Trump's crosshairs. As he named his ambassador to Denmark on Sunday, Trump wrote that, quote, "For purposes of national security and freedom throughout the world, the United States of America feels the ownership and control of Greenland is an absolute necessity." Trump also suggested Sunday he would retake control of the Panama Canal. He called the raids Panama charges to use the vital shipping route a, quote, complete ripoff.
If the principles, both moral and legal, of this magnanimous gesture of giving are not followed, then we will demand that the Panama Canal be returned to the United States of America in full, quickly, and without question.
Every square meter of the canal will continue to belong to Panama, said the country's president, Jose Raul Molino, rejecting Trump's allegations of overcharging.
El canal no tiene control.
Rates are not a whim. They are established publicly in an open hearing, considering market conditions, international competition, operating costs, and the needs of maintenance and modernization of the interoceanic waterway.
Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen also pushed back, saying Greenland is not for sale. Trump's initial calls to purchase Greenland in 2019 during his first term came to nothing. But his statements now, as he prepares to take the oath of office on January 20th, are making some allies and partners wary. That includes Canada. Trump has referred to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau as, quote, the governor, suggesting the U.S. can absorb its northern neighbor, as he threatened 25% tariffs against the country. Trump's end goal is unclear, but on Monday, his son Eric Trump posted to social media a doctored photo of the president-elect purchasing Canada, Greenland, and the Panama Canal via Amazon, the online shopping website. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News, Washington.
In environmental news, the UN estimates that the world produces over 430 million metric tons of plastic waste every year, with the largest source being single-use packaging. VOA's Valdia Bhattapuri reports on a movement to cut down on such waste.
Trace Supermarket in Vienna, Virginia, near Washington, has everything a shopper needs except containers. That's right, no bags, no boxes, no bottles. If you want to bring something home, even liquids like cooking oil or shampoo, you need to come prepared. Visitors bring their own containers and weigh them, fill up what they need, and then buy their goods by weight. Mala Persson is the owner of Trace.
I got the idea to open the store, it was like 2018, so how many years, almost 6 years ago. I got tired of seeing so much garbage and plastic and trash, like single-use coffee cups, like single-use packaging, and I knew that less and less was going to be recycled.
per salt open trace in 2021. She says, according to Greenpeace data, only 6% of plastic waste in the U.S. is recycled, and she hopes stores like hers can make a difference.
In the 3 years that we've been open, we've refilled 21,000 containers. That's just containers. That doesn't even count the things that are not wrapped in plastic. That's reducing the demand for that plastic bottle.
Shopping at a refill store might not be as easy as a full-service store at first, but customer says it gives them a sense of accomplishment. Phil Corcoran of Virginia has been coming regularly.
Oh, you feel good because, you know, you're doing your little bit for the environment, and the staff are very friendly and helpful, and they're very much into doing for the planet and the environment as well. So, yeah, it feels good.
In Tacoma Park in Maryland, another refill and zero-waste store called Fulfillery even offers their own self-made products. One of them is an all-purpose cleaning tablet made from recycled cooking oil. Fulfillery co-founder Rini Saha explains how to use it.
So you open this up, and once you open it up, you cut it up, add water, and it becomes a really great cleaner. It cleans granite, it cleans wood.
Saha opened the store 4 years ago. She says changing consumer behavior, no matter how small, is key to reducing waste.
If the only thing they could do is carry around a reusable straw, that's still saving almost 500 straws a year, right? We just hope that people try to stop where they can.
According to the advocacy organization, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, there are about 1,300 stores in the U.S. with a zero-waste concept, and this number is growing. Around half are refill stores, and others are stores that have a large selection of refillable items. Valdia Baraputri, VOA News, Washington.
Small farmers in six South African provinces are using homegrown digital technology normally available only to larger commercial farmers to get the most out of their fields. Marzi de Klerk reports from the fields in South Africa's Magaliesberg region.
Advances in agriculture technology have helped commercial farmers boost their yields worldwide. But affordability and accessibility issues often mean smaller farmers don't have access to the same tech. To bridge this gap, South Africa's Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, or CSIR, is developing a web-based system tailored for small farmers. It's called the Precision Agriculture Information System, or PIAS. Moses Che is the project's lead scientist. He says the platform works in local languages and uses artificial intelligence to analyze data that can help farmers make their fields more productive.
We have adapted soil pH, soil organic content, soil nitrogen content or information that no other system has gone down to that level to generate such information.
Data is collected with drones and other equipment and is then compared to satellite images to help farmers optimize growing conditions. According to the CSIR, the system could increase farmers' yields by up to 20%. Stefan Janssen van Rensburg is a digital farming expert with Bayer Crop Science, which was not part of the CSIR project. He says teaching farmers how to analyze the data is one of the challenges.
It needs to be affordable for farmers to be adapted. The second one is the educational part. Farmers need to be educated, trained and upskilled how to use the products, the best products, effectively.
Northwest of Johannesburg, aspiring commercial farmer Wandile Sikosana is still at the wow stage, but says learning about the current PIAS's capabilities and how it can benefit his maize yields hasn't proven too difficult.
They say that they can check the moisture in the soil, I mean, via satellite. It's like, wow. Yeah, no, I understand what it tells me. And it's not that difficult to use, I must say. For somebody who was born before technology, I can find my way around.
As Sikosana and his team rush to plant the last seeds of the season, he says he is hoping to use the PIAS data to help him choose the right fertilizer for better yields next year. Marisa de Klerk, VOA News, Magaliesberg District, South Africa.
And finally, today we return to Ukraine. Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022, a musical group of American Christians calling themselves the Texas Country Boys have been playing charity events in Ukraine. Tatiana Kukurika met with the band members to find out why Ukraine is so important to them. Anna Rice narrates the story.
One last-minute rehearsal and the Texas Country Boys are ready to give a concert in Khmelnytsky, Ukraine.
The Texas Country Boys came together in about 2015, but they first came to Ukraine in 2016. And when they came here, they said, we want to come back again and again and again. And they've done this as a way of showing love for the Ukrainian people. It's a gift of friendship.
This is the band's fourth time in Ukraine since Russia's invasion of the country in 2022. The group is made up of dedicated Christians, and that's a big part of everything they do.
We'd never been in a war situation before, but and our families were a little bit nervous as well. But one thing that we know is that there's been a call of God on our lives to share the good news. And so we were very hopeful that we could come and bring hope and a future for the people of Ukraine. So we are glad to take the risk.
To organize these charity tours in Ukraine, the band spends the money the 10 members make playing concerts in the U.S.
We feel like that Ukrainians need to see ordinary people who relate to the problems of Ukraine with a love that says, we're not afraid. We stand with you. We support you.
As part of their Power of Hope charity tour, the Texas Country Boys are raising money for Ukraine's military.
Probably more people in America have prayed for Ukraine in the last 2 years than in all of their life. And when the war started, people didn't know much about Ukraine. But we hear something about Ukraine almost every day on television, radio, and on the internet. And we care about Ukraine.
The band sends the money they have raised to local military chaplains who determine the best use for the funds. In the city of Lutsk in northwestern Ukraine, the money will be used to treat wounded soldiers. In Khmelnytsky, to repair military vehicles.
We used the money to repair one of the vehicles used by the 88th Battalion of the 106th Brigade of the Territorial Defense. At the moment, the vehicle in question is being repaired.
During the visit, the Texas Country Boys are going to give 10 concerts in Ukraine and neighboring Poland.
The importance and usefulness of these concerts lies not just in raising money. We do it all the time and use it for whatever immediate needs we have. But the main thing for us is to see we're supported by others.
On top of giving a concert in Khmelnytsky, Texas Country Boys have also played in Lviv, Vinnytsia, Zhytomyr, Kiev, Berdychev, Lutsk and Rivne, and will finish off their tour in Warsaw, Poland. For Tatiana Kukurika in Khmelnytsky, Ukraine, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Karish.